Are you ready for the Low Blows Network? Every Wednesday on the Low Blows Network, the Low Blows team are at hand to break down, analyze, and make fun of all things pro wrestling. Hosted by former pro wrestler Rick Nash.
I think the only reasonable thing we can do now is turn John Cena heel.
Selfie with me fucking dog.
Banned from Nigeria. I will be talking to the government tomorrow morning.
YouTube star Corporate King.
This elephant has four legs. Joe Ross has four legs. Joseph Stalin, if he had two more legs.
Bone saw rips off his shirt, yeah? And it says, Chuck Yerlaw, big dirty tricorder.
And the queen of Irish wrestling, Katie Harvey.
I want one to say, just CM
I'm
Punk.
I'm so embarrassed. CM Punk.
It's Low Blows. Bro, Low Blows!
It's been a bad week for breakups, as not only Kim Kardashian and Kanye West filed for divorce after 7 years, but then just as we were reeling from that news, it was announced, even more tragically, that Daft Punk also called time on their 28-year partnership of making absolute bangers together. Very emotional times, but in the words of both Daft Punk and then sampled by Kanye West, that doesn't kill me can only make me stronger. Guys, as we get kicked off here on another edition of Low Blows, Rick Nash, Dom Tuck, and the returning Katie Harvey. She has politicked her way back onto the show after getting politicked off by Dom for a week, carrying on his sensational takeover of the Low Blows Network. Katie, you're back though, we can confirm. We've renegotiated. You're not jumping to AEW or anything like that.
Well, you should probably ask Dom, to be honest, rather than ask me, so.
Don't worry, she won't be here for long.
Guys, what breakup in professional wrestling broke your heart the most? Dom, we'll start with you.
Yeah, so lots of tag teams throughout the year, like all of the great tag teams, like they seem to break up at one stage or another. Think of the Hardys, Edge and Christian, DX, like they've all broken up and feuded with each other. I think it's just natural in wrestling, like, no tag team or stable or faction just sticks together forever. But the one that hurt the most, the one I thought was going to stick around forever, was Owen Richards and Steog, the Super Nintembros. It's self-explanatory. Like, we thought they were going to be the Nintembros forever. And, like, Owen Richards is doing great stuff at the moment. But Steog, like, he just disappeared. And then Owen Richards was left on his own. John Bernard came in. He kind of helped him through his grief with Retro Galactic, but it just wasn't the same.
No.
His grief.
It wasn't. There was, and look at him, what he's become. He's become hardened. He's become bitter. And also as well, congratulations, Owen Richards. He's become a father as well this week. He announced it. So huge congratulations. Now the Nintembros are like the Nintendads.
Aww, that's so cute. Yes.
They literally are, like, it's crazy. But yeah, no, that is fairly heartbreaking, I have to say. I think we all thought, like, they were reliving their youth through the character and we were reliving it with them. And then now they're dads and it's like, oh yeah, aging happens. Katie Harvey, what breakup broke your heart the most?
So I went a slightly different track. You know, it was just too painful for me to speak about the Nintembros. So I went for something a little easier to talk about. WrestleMania 20, Christian versus Chris Jericho. Oh. Trish comes out. You think she's there to look after Jericho. She accidentally elbows him. Christian gets the win. She's so apologetic. She's so upset. You know, first it doesn't look like Jericho's going to take her apology, but then he does because he's the nice guy in the scenario. And then she slaps him harder than I've seen anyone slap anyone in wrestling. And then her and Christian walk up the ramp and have the most disgusting kiss I've ever seen.
filthy.
How he made it so creepy and so uncomfortable, because I rewatched it just before I came on. And like 20 years later or whatever it is, I'm shivering. I'm just like, oh. Yeah. But like that whole storyline was so well done, and when she like she did that to Chris Jericho, like my heart broke. Like it was so good, it was so well done.
And it's like, yeah, I remember that kiss. They proper like swap spits. Like you could see it was like, oh, this is filthy. Like
he dove in is the only way you can describe it. Like he held her by the back of the head, fucking put on a swimming cap and goggles, and just dove in. Like
he kissed her like every wrestling fan probably would Trish Stratus if they got their shot. Do you know what I mean? He's like, I might never get this shot again. I'm going for it. I'm gonna get me money's worth here. Hilarious. Yeah, no, that was heartbreaking for me. You know, they say the first is always the worst. I remember being a kid and like really just attaching to a tag team that a lot of people mightn't even remember or recognize as a tag team, but to me they were everything. They were my first. I've spoken about before how the 1-2-3 Kid, my first wrestling memory is the 1-2-3 Kid beating Bob Holly, or him and Bob Holly winning the tag team championships. That's not what I'm talking about here, but I did hold on to the memories of the 1-2-3 Kid, and then when I saw him later revived and got back into wrestling, and I saw him as X-Pac, and then saw him with a new tag team partner in Kane. And what was beautiful about this was that Kane was like, he was a monster. He was a tortured soul. We all knew about his story with The Undertaker, but X-Pac seemed to bring out the heart in him and kind of encouraged him to be better in himself and so on. And then, like, I even remember one of the most iconic moments ever was when X-Pac's like, go on, you know, tell the fans what you think. And Kane got his, he'd never spoken before, but he got, like, because he was so burned or something, a condition which miraculously just cleared up in later years. Now he's a mayor, but we'll forget about that. Back then we were like, Kane does not talk, but he got the little vocalizer thing out and he's just like, suck it. And it's like, oh my god, Kane spoke. And then X-Pac just turned on him, and like, you know, you look at it now and it's like, right, standard wrestling turn, like, you know. But when you're a kid, you don't know to expect this. You're like their friends, and like my friends, they're going to be around forever, because why wouldn't they be their friends? So when they just kick each other in the head for no reason, and then, you know, fucking X-Pac goes off with this Tory young one, like, it was disgraceful. I was like, I was fuming, I was heartbroken. I still haven't fully recovered from it, if I'm being honest. I still think about it sometimes, and it hurts just as much to this day. No matter how many times I see wrestling tag team partners turn on each other, like I said, the first is always the worst. Adam Turner in the chat says the Festival of Friendship with Jericho and Kevin Owens is heartbreaking. It really was. Why is Jericho such a well done segment figure? Why can he just make us feel however he wants us to? It's nuts. Like, he's not a sympathetic figure, but like when people turn on him, we're like, not Jericho, not that really arrogant, loud guy.
We could never have seen this coming.
Yeah, exactly. Except he does it to people, like, you know, regularly too. Jonathan says, showing your youth there, Dom. Super Nintembros were obviously going to be replaced by the Nintembro 64. Oh yeah. That makes sense. Guys, we have a really, really big show coming up. Everything happens on Wednesdays. It was just announced a couple of hours ago that the Big Show is going to AEW. I don't think that is something that has ever been discussed. I don't think the entire fan speculation, and we've talked about every permutation of what can happen in AEW versus WWE. I don't think one person has said, what if the Big Show jumped? Well, he did, and we're here to react to it. Also, we had the Elimination Chamber at the weekend. Progress are back as well, and whoo, they brought a lot of conversation with them. And guys, we've got so much more to cover. So let's get this show in a row. Katie, Dom, are you ready to go?
Yes.
Then let's do this. Ladies and gentlemen, it is time for Low Blows. We're going to get this show kicked off because it is time for
Queen versus King.
Queen versus King, because my cute co-host, no matter who they are, whether it's Corbin Keane or now that he's on sabbatical, the person filling in from Dom Tuck,
My two co-hosts are good friends, but they are even better enemies, and we are pitting them against each other as we discuss the wrestling news of the week. What we do is we put 30 seconds on the clock and we get points for punditry. So I ask the five top stories, I ask a question based on them, we have my two co-hosts give their opinions on these stories, and we keep score on who is winning. Katie, I must warn you, Dom is getting much better at this. He beat me last week in this. And I was intimidating the chat room, who were the judges. Like, while this was going on, I was intimidating them and threatening them, and he still won. So, Katie, like, Dom is getting the hang of this.
A bit of
very scary
insider
stuff.
Information.
Very scary stuff. The weekly scoreboard, Dom is obviously representing Keane while he's away, so it is 3 apiece, so you're playing for superiority. The winner this week will be leading. Katie, we're going to be starting with you first, and the biggest story, what else could it be? Because we had sensational news breaking today as it was announced that Big Show Paul White had signed for AEW and will be a commentator for their new AEW Dark Elevation show that will begin on Mondays, as well as being an active in-ring performer. While this is definitely surprising, is this actually a big deal though?
Of course it's a big deal, because he's 7 foot tall.
He's gonna eliminate him.
No, but seriously, it is a big deal. I've spoken about my love for the Big Show many, many times, and if they're bringing him in on an on-screen role, he is seriously underutilized as a character, because he is so charismatic, he's so funny, he can turn the switch, he can be intimidating. If he becomes an authority figure in AEW, I think that could be a massive coup and a whole new lease on his career.
Okay, interesting. I hadn't thought about the authority figure side. And yeah, one thing you can never say about Big Show is that he can't turn. He can definitely turn on a switch. Cody even joking about it, where he's like, I think he's a babyface now on Twitter. Dom, your counterpoint.
As much as I love to argue against KE, no, it's definitely a big deal. Like, not only for hardcore fans that are like familiar with him from the Attitude Era, the Ruthless Aggression Era, pretty much anything onwards, like, he is a big name. Like, even for casual fans, like, if you showed a picture of the Big Show to some lad on the street, like, 8 times out of 10, he'd say, yeah, that's the Big Show. Like, he's up there with, like, pretty recognizable names. Like Katie said as well, because he's 7 foot tall. Like, it is definitely a huge get, no matter what he does.
Okay, interesting. I don't really agree that it's a huge deal, if I'm being honest. It's definitely surprising and something we're talking about. And it's a bit gas. For me, like, again, it's one of these things where, like, when Big Show shows up on Raw, it's like, oh, the fucking Big Show, what's he got to do? And then he's in AEW and you have the AEW fanboys going, shots have been fired. This is the day that things changed. And it's just like, he's the same person, the same performer, can do the same things. I don't think it's going to be, I don't think in terms of the casual fans, he's going to like pull them in. I don't think they're going to like, I think when casual fans see older wrestlers on TV that they recognize 20 years ago, they do. Do you remember that week in AEW where they aired after the basketball and there was those tweets coming out going, lol, Chris Jericho got fat. I think that's how casual fans watch wrestling, where they're like, he's still going. Or the Undertaker's like, this is just getting sad. I don't think they're necessarily like, the Big Show I'm going to watch, but I will give the point to Katie, because I hadn't thought about him in an authority figure role, and I could actually be convinced on that. So yeah, I'll give the point to Katie there. We shall see. I live to be proven wrong. Question 2, in a serious case of deja vu, Natalya responded to being valued at $1 by a WWE on Fox tweet last week, where they were doing the same game that was the birth of Mr. €1, of course, will we ever forget. She said that she's always questioned her self-worth and she won't be judged by this. Okay, whatever, Natalya. Does Natalya need to just get over it, or is she a victim here, Dom?
Yes, she is a victim. Like, I'm not a fan of her at all, but to put a performer's worth from a lowly, like, social media admin or whatever, like, it is ridiculous. Like, you can't put someone as €1 or $1. Like, it is absolutely ridiculous, especially someone that's been wrestling for like 15 years or whatever it is. It is absolutely ridiculous. You can't €1, $1. $1 is even less than €1, mind you, as well. So that is worth less than Phil Boyd, according to Dan Manning. So that is wow. Madness.
I think we valued it. I think people did the maths last week and it was like 78 cents. So yeah, Katie, be careful.
Look, my door is shut in here. Natalia needs to get over it because she needs to think about her husband, her partner, TJ at home. She needs to think about how he feels constantly listening to this €1, $1 evaluation. She needs to understand that, you know, there's a limit. Sometimes you can only listen to so much. And then sometimes, you know, Phil, I mean, Natalia, just has to let it go because, you know, it's just change the track.
Uh-oh. I think you've been caught. I'm going to give the point to Katie there. You're probably big. Really appreciate it. And also as well, Natalia, fantasy football. Have you never heard of this? Like, I've got Godongan, who's one of the best players. He may be the Premier League player of the year. Don't tell Phil I said that as well. I don't want him to know that I actually think a City player is doing really good. I got him for like 5.5 million and he's the best player in the league. It doesn't matter. It's a little fantasy sports game. You signed up for this. This is exactly what you signed up for. I'm sorry if you didn't understand that that's what the gig was. She needs to get over it. Point to Katie. Katie leading 2-0. Dom, you're in a hole already, but there is still time to catch up. Kyrie Zane was denied the ability to work the March 3rd Stardom Budokan Hall show by WWE. Of course, Kyrie has returned to Japan, but is still under WWE contract. Should WWE have let her work the show, or was this fair considering she is still under contract?
Okay. I'm going to say something a little bit controversial here. And ooh. I think that it was fair that they said no. Because if they say yes, it opens the floodgates. And, fuck it. I was trying to convince myself that's what I thought. It's not. No, it's really unfair that they didn't let her work it. They should probably have just let her do it. I mean, she's in Japan. She's not wrestling. I tried to argue for argument's sake and it wasn't going to work. So I think they're being unfair.
It's not great in a points game to undermine yourself when you've got 30 seconds to make one point and you contradict yourself midstream. So Dom, you just literally need to say words for the next 30 seconds. It's on the table.
Think about it this though, like if the answer or if the circumstances happened like 5-10 years ago, like the answer would have been no. But think about the last few years. Like Triple H has done ICW, like he's made a special appearance on ICW. And she's not actively wrestling at the moment. And she's in Japan. So, like, there's no risk or anything involved in this. Like, it's only positives for Stardom. It's only, like, raising their stock, really. Like, yeah, I think it's definitely on WWE.
Okay, yeah, very good point. Well made. And even then, you didn't even need to do that much because you just didn't contradict yourself in the same 30-second space. Dom on the comeback trail, 2-1. Impact last week opted against using Sammy Guevara after he rejected creative for the idea they had to use. Then upon traveling to Nashville to make a scheduled appearance, Guevara's counter idea was reportedly to win the X Division Championship, then hijack it and take it back to AEW without defending it, where they'd later have to strip him of it so he'd never actually lose. Dom, who looks worse in this situation, Impact or Sammy?
From the information that you've presented there, Sammy, because hypothetically, let's think about it this way. Say if I wasn't actively training in Fight Factory, let's say I was in the School of Irish Wrestling and I went up to Kate and Phil and I was like, I have an idea. How about I win the Irish Junior Heavyweight title and I steal it and bring it on OTT and you never get to defend it on Fight Factory?
Is that your whole thing? I would say no. Yeah.
Exactly. That's my point.
Yeah, well made. Yeah, no, it nailed it. Katie, you got anything that can beat that?
Well, no, I'm going to take it from the other side and say it's Impact's fault because they're longer in the game. All right. Why did they not have a plan nailed down? Why was it left up to Sammy to present ideas? Why was he not contacted with a storyline in mind? That's literally our job, to write the storylines for the wrestlers. Everyone knows if you let wrestlers have free reign, like, it's chaos. Like, it only works in a very, very small minority of things. So Impact are to blame for not reining them in.
Really good argument. Yeah, like, I It is a really good argument, but I'm going to go with Dom here because I think it's the wrestler's job to be professional first and foremost. Yes, you've got a good point. I think there is two sides to this story, and I think you can spin it very much where you can blame one side or the other. But you've made a very good point there. But I think at the end of the day, like, Sammy agreed to work for them, and his idea, it was the typical wrestler idea. Well, how about... Okay, I'm just going to throw this out. I don't know. I just thought of it. How about I win the belt and I'm a dominant champion and no one can beat me? You know what I mean?
I got an idea. How about I beat everyone and win the belt?
Yeah, exactly. Like, but Sammy needs to cop on. So I'm going to give it to Dom, which means we are leveled up as we head into question five. Dom, you're nearly making a complete comeback here. Can you complete the sweep? We're going to have Katie go first. But WWE had a giant new class starting the Performance Center this week with names including Taya Valkyrie, Harlem Bravado, Priscilla Kelly, Bronson Rex Steiner, who's the son of Rick Steiner. And I never even appreciated Rex Steiner. It's very clever. Anthony Henry, who's one half of the Workhorse Men, and Blake Christian. Which one of these are you most looking forward to seeing on WWE TV in the future?
In 2021, it is about time that we had another Steiner on television. I am so excited when I seen his name in the list because I love the Steiners. This is going to be class. You know what I mean? And you know what WWE does really well? They do second and generation, third generation stars really, really well. They build them up well. They know how to book them. They know how to like separate them enough from their famous fathers, but, you know, pull on the heritage when needed. So like, I think this is going to be such a good fit if he's actually a good wrestler.
Extremely on brand answer for Katie Harvey there. Dom, who are you looking forward to seeing?
I was going to say Bronson Rex Steiner, but I have another answer for this. Okay. I'm going to say Taya Valkyrie. Because there is already a feud that is ready-made for Taya Valkyrie in the WWE. So Taya Valkyrie versus Eva Valkyrie. Winner gets to keep the name. She's already subtweeted her. Like, it's ready to go. It's going to be unreal.
Oh, snap. Very tough. Yeah, to be honest, I think it was on the table for you, but I think Katie backed up her like predictable answer with strong logic. So I am going to give this one to Katie. So Katie taking a 4-3 lead. Well, very, very close. And Dom, considering you went down 2-0, you fought valiantly to get back there. Anyway, that's the news from the week. There is a lot in the ring to discuss. So we're going to get right to it. The good and the bad, starting with the bad, because ladies and gentlemen, it's time for...
Say something stupid.
Worst moments of the week. In at number six, we want to talk about SmackDown.
Yeah, so another solid SmackDown. I'll talk about the good later on, and this is awesome. But this is something I've noticed, like, both on Raw and SmackDown this year, and it's something they've done for, like, the last few years. So they had a six-man tag in the main event with everyone from the Chamber. Like, what is their obsession with putting everyone that's in the Chamber in the same match on the go-home show? Like, I think that kind of ruins the novelty for me. Like, I get their way of thinking where it's like, oh, yeah, it's to build excitement. Like, I know on Raw they had, like, a gauntlet match or something where, like, the winner got to go in last. Like, that makes more sense. But this is just, like, a random six-man tag. And to me, it just, like, kind of ruins the novelty a little bit. So, like, it made me a little bit less excited about the Chamber because, like, you're seeing all of these people already interact in the same match. So, like, there's only so much more they can do in the Chamber that they already haven't done on the SmackDown. And they've done it for, like, the last few years. Like, they're very guilty of it, especially with, like, Money in the Bank and stuff like that. But it's only a real, like, small thing. Like, the match I did enjoy, but it's just something that came to my mind. Like, they're very guilty of it lately.
Yeah, it's lazy as well because it's just like six people. How we do this? Six-man tag. It's the first thing you think of. Do you know what I mean? And it's like, yeah. All right, calm down there, Teddy Long. Anyway, moving on. In at number five, I want to talk about AEW. And it's something that, in general, I'm not a big fan of. And of course, they did it here. And it was with these people. So I was never going to like this. So Cody and Brandy did a gender reveal last week. I don't like gender reveals. Like, I don't mind it if it's a private thing, but I don't like public gender reveals. It's very showy. It's very narcissistic for me. It's very like, you know, making a big public thing about your personal news and just trying to, you know, grab attention in a way that you can't really get criticized for, because it's like, hey man, this is our pregnancy, it's none of your business. And it's like, you're making it my business by making a part of a TV show. And it was just like, it was just an excuse to get Brandi on TV. And again, this is kind of, this is what I worry about with AEW, where it's like, and even the Big Show signing is kind of like this, where like he's getting signed because he's mates with Cody and Jericho and stuff like that. He's not someone that, like, if they'd never met him before, the Young Bucks, if they were running AEW, I don't think they'd be targeting Big Show. Do you know what I mean? It's Cody's like kind of getting the boys in here. And that reminds me of kind of Impact, and it reminds me of WCW kind of at its worst impulses, where they're just kind of making it the Rhodes family show. And they're a company that criticizes, you know, WWE and how they carry on with things. And it just is, it's very self-indulgent and just narcissistic. Now, to be fair, it was only, like, I'll give them credit, and this is why it's low on the list. It was only a 1 minute deal. Like, Brandi came out, and like, Brandi set it up backstage where she's like, hey guys, just wanted to check back in. This is what we're going to do. Cody actually doesn't know what the gender is, so it'll be a surprise for him. So they validated it, and then they did the, like, balloons popped or whatever it was, and then it came out that it's going to be a girl. But what I found cheesy about this was as well, it's still a wrestling show. So they're on the stage, and Cody then has to, the other way wrestlers have to talk with their hands sometimes if they don't have a microphone, so you have to be like, you do this and I'm going to do this. And so Cody had to be like, it's a girl. Wow. And he's like, he's genuinely finding out the gender, but he's acting like a wrestler at the same time, and he's like putting his hand over her belly to show, you are pregnant. And it's just like, no, stop, this is too cringe, I can't. Jimmy says it would be decent heel heat if that was the character. Exactly. It's kind of a dicky, self-indulgent thing to do. Think of Harry Kane, if anyone saw that, the little video he put out on social media where he's scoring penalties until, like, eventually he has to kick it into one balloon and it comes out that it's a boy. And it's just like, oh, it's such... It's not for me. Again, someone may be able to sell me on it, but right now I'm not a big fan of public gender reveals. If it's something you want to do in private, like as one partner surprising the other, that's fine. And I'm not saying I'm an expert and you should live your life based on what I say. What the fuck do I know? I'm just a guy who hosts a wrestling podcast, but it's just not for me. Anyway, moving on, in at number four, let's talk about the bad from Elimination Chamber.
Yeah, so all around Elimination Chamber, like, it wasn't bad in the slightest. Like, so they had the SmackDown Elimination Chamber on first, then they had the Raw Elimination Chamber on for the main event. But I think everything in between was just a bit meh for me. Like, it was a real two-match show. So first of all, you had Bryan. He overcame everyone in the Elimination Chamber, and he would be the one to face Roman Reigns. I was expecting, like, 5 to 6 minutes. Like, I wasn't expecting it to go, like 10, 12 minutes or anything like that. But I was expecting something, but it just felt a bit flat to me. Like, it was literally bell rings. He gets him in the S-lock. Then there's, like, a powerbomb. Then it's straight into the finish. He chokes him out. And I just thought that was a bit flat. They could have, like, thrown in, like, 2 or 3 more minutes, I just thought. But it was still fun. The women's tag title match as well. Like, I'm just not a fan of this whole storyline where it's like you've seen John Cena and Shawn Michaels do it. You've seen Braun Strowman and Seth Rollins do it, where, like, they're feuding, but they're tag team partners and, like, they're fighting for the belts. Like, I'm just not a fan of it. So they had Sasha Banks and Bianca Belair against Nia Jax and Shayna Baszler. And, like, the match is all right. Like, I wasn't that into it, but I'm just sick of the storyline. Like, I think I preferred it this way, though, because they didn't actually have them win the belts. Because, like, when they do that storyline and the people that are feuding win the belts, it's a bit, like, predictable when they're going to drop the belts as well. But, yeah, I'm just not a big fan of that storyline. It's only, like I was saying with the SmackDown talk, like, it's only nitpicky. Yeah, that's pretty much it.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. And it's kind of... One thing as well about this is... They have, like, Bianca doing all her interactions with Sasha, and she's still saying, who am I going to pick, though? And it's just like, well, you're in a pay-per-view match with Sasha, pretend to be a tag team. Like, so unless you do this with Asuka next month, I'm going to bet that it's Sasha. Because, like, you're not even...
There has to be a better way to build the feud.
Yeah, like still, we still have the intrigue around, because even like it was great the way, and we'll talk about the good with Edge and stuff. It was great the way they kind of had that at the end of the Bryan Reigns thing. And I agree with what you say, because it was just very, it felt shit on Daniel Bryan. And it felt like the match that we built up, like again, it was a great Elimination Chamber match. And then it's just like, well, that didn't matter. And then the fact that you had Edge come straight out afterwards, it's like, well, nope, Daniel Bryan's not getting another shot. It's not like this is going to be paid off in Fastlane with a real match. It's like, nope, Daniel Bryan lost, and all of that 40 minutes was just a waste of your time. Whereas like, but there was intrigue over who Edge would pick. We were making arguments. We knew it was going to be Sasha and Bianca. Like we knew straight away, like, and we were looking forward to it. It's a great match, but don't like tease it. Don't turn around and go, who am I going to pick? Cause it's like, we fucking know, like it's obvious. It's like, it's the person you're feuding with. So yeah, no, very, very good point. In a number three, let's talk about the bad from Raw.
Yeah, so Raw are doing this like weird thing at Retribution where they've been wrestling basically Xavier Woods for weeks on end now. And like, I want to make it clear, the matches haven't been bad. Just the general storyline, I don't really know where it's going. He's kind of beaten everyone in Retribution now. And on Raw, they had a tag match, him and Kofi against two of them, and they bet them again. And like, Xavier Woods now calling out Reckoning and stuff. And it's just, it's all whatever. But like, this week then, they started teasing a split of Retribution. And I'm just like, why? Like, he's haven't really been around that long. He's haven't really done anything. You don't really have me invested enough to care who's going to feud if you split. Like, and it was just Ali, like, shouting at everyone, like, that they were disappointed, they were this, they were that. Now, an interesting twist could be, like, if he, like, dumps someone and replaces them. But if it's just, like, a split, where they're just going to be wrestling each other, I'm not really into it. There's not really a need for it. I don't really see where they're going with this whole thing. And like, it, you know, there should be a better payoff than what they're kind of teasing now. Now, look, I've been wrong on storylines before. This could be the start of something fantastic. But it's all just kind of fallen flat for me. You know what I mean? I'm not interested in anything that's happening there, which is very rare for me as well when the New Day are involved, because I usually am all in on everything they do.
Yeah.
The other thing I had for Raw in the doc, all I had was Randy Orton ? Because I feel like I need to talk about what happened with Randy Orton, but I don't know where to put it because I flip-flop on this storyline so much. Okay. Basically, the gist of it is it looks like Alexa Bliss is Papa Shango and she has actual magical powers now and she's inside a pentagram and she's like cursing Randy Orton because he was cutting this promo, again, a very typical Randy Orton promo, and he coughs halfway through it. And I actually was thinking, watching it, like, huh, that's weird that they didn't kind of like cut that out or whatever, you know, like this
you're
is
like Corona.
Yeah, it's like this is a backstage pre-tape, like a cough is a weird thing to include. And then all of a sudden he starts vomiting up like this black oil all over himself. And then that's it. That's the end of the promo. And it's just, I don't know if I love it. I don't know if I hate it. Like, it happened. Like, I've accepted it happened. I don't know where it's going. But it's like, are we now to believe that Alexa is, like, controlling Randy? Is there black magic? Is it voodoo? Like, where do you go with this? You know what I mean? Like, and he's just reminding people that he set the Fiend on fire constantly. And I'm just like, there's so many elements to this storyline that like I need just to start like treading it back together now, because honestly, like, my mind is blown. Like, I just don't know what to think of any of it, and I don't know where to put it. I just know I need to talk about it.
It's a weird move on Alexa's part. Like, I've got these newfound magical powers, and it's like, you know, it's that whole thing, what would you do if you got superpowers? Turns out Alexa's choice would be, I'm gonna make that guy puke tar, which is an odd move.
But would you not do it, say, like in the middle of an elimination chamber? Or like a different kind of match, or when he's around someone, maybe he's talking to someone he fancies, and then you know, like, it just seems to be like, if she is magic, there just seems to be better uses of it than like a random pre-tape backstage promo.
I like how you imagine like Randy Orton's life as a high school movie, like he's talking to a cute girl at the lockers.
You know, and then it's really embarrassing, but she actually thinks it's quite cute. And then, you know,
stop writing me cute for Randy Orton. Can you not write fan fiction for 1 second? You're doing a podcast, Harvey.
I'm just going to jot down that idea for later.
Oh, amazing. I agree. And you know what? With the retribution stuff as well, like, I could be, there's a universe where I could be into this, like a shit stable where it's like, we're going to take over. And then they just job out. And then like a few weeks in, the leaders go, what you, we're supposed to take over, lads. Come on. But it's not what they're doing. They're just shit. And they've run out of ideas for them. Like, it just hasn't worked because no one gave enough of a shit about this at any stage, which is just a shame, because if you see, Heel Ali is actually quite good. Mm. And even like a few weeks ago when he's doing the Mustafa, my name is Mustafa, everyone's been saying it wrong and kind of like calling people racist and making people uncomfortable and stuff like that. There's like, there's fucking legs here. There's something here. But it's not this. So I don't know. It's like, it'd be weird if he just came out next week and made no reference of retribution. So if they just use this and then they just pretend it never happened, and then we get Dominik Dijakovic and Mia Yim just being themselves, I'd probably be okay with that, if I'm being honest. Like, because, this has not worked. In a number two, I want to talk about last week. They had Kyle O'Reilly got attacked by Adam Cole in the main event. So it was a six-man tag. It was Balor, Kyle O'Reilly, and Roderick Strong against Pete Dunne and that whole stable. Pete Dunne, Logan, and Birch. Adam Cole hadn't heard from him all night. And then in the middle of that, like, he comes out, he attacks Kyle O'Reilly, and Kyle O'Reilly is seriously hurt. Apparently afterwards, like, he was selling his injury and then taken to the back, and fans started reporting that he had, but there was like people who were there, like in the performance center, you know, the stooge fans that they have, but they're like, they're actual real fans, but they're like connected to WWE somehow. I don't know if they're family and friends or whatever, but anyway, it leaked that he had a seizure, and then WWE basically came out and they're like, he's fine, there's not a thing, and they told it today, Meltzer, there's no injury, like, he didn't have a seizure. And everyone what I'm putting this here for is because of the reaction, because like everyone then came out, like, because whatever WWE does something, everyone is just like ready to kill them and just consider them the bad guys for whatever reason. So everyone comes out and they're like, how dare you make fun of people with seizures? Having seizures is such a big, important thing. And it's like, WWE are just like, we never said he had a seizure. We never, like, he was just selling. And it's not kind of, it's not a storyline. It's, he was literally just selling to the back, and someone else reported that he has a seizure. They said that. And it's just, again, and I hate this, it's one of the worst things about 2021, when people don't like something and then they don't want to just say, I don't like this. Yeah, I'm just going to be difficult about this. So they try attach an issue to it. Do you know what I mean? They try make it a thing that someone should be cancelled for, because it's not just, they can't just stop by saying, this wasn't to my taste, but everyone has different tastes. They're like, no, everyone should hate this, therefore I'm going to try make it into a case, I'm going to try make it into an issue. And then they're like, seizures are an important thing, you know, 700 people die of seizures every year. And it's like, that, no, seizures happened. This isn't what you're thinking. Like, stop trying to make it into an issue just to create anger with WWE because you have this weird grudge with them. Like, it's fine. If you don't like it, don't watch it. But, like, it's what you're saying just did not happen. And it was absolutely farcical. It was ridiculous. And it's becoming self-parody now. It's almost, like, cooler to be a WWE fan at this stage, because if you're not, you're one of these people who are just like criticizing them for everything and trying to make it into a fucking issue. When there's plenty of valid things to criticize them over. We're in a segment called Say Something Stupid that WWE is currently dominating. There's things you can criticize them over, but contextualize it a bit. Not everything is like, this should be banned forever. And you know, and we know where it comes from at the end of the day. It's like, your favorite wrestler isn't getting used the way you want them to get used. Like, that's what it's about. You don't care about any of the issues. You're unhappy that your person doesn't have the belt. And it's childish at this stage. And I'm just, I wasn't here for it. And it was very transparent last week. Moving on to more serious matters, let's talk number one about Progress, because there was a lot of discussion online last week when it came to Progress coming back on the WWE Network. Katie?
Yeah, so I said I would cover the Progress show this weekend. And as you know, I normally keep my wrestling for Tuesday and Wednesday, so it's fresh. Unfortunately, there's been a lot surrounding this show, which I don't think we can talk about the Progress show without addressing. And that is the statement that went out a few days ago.
Yeah.
Now, I want to preface this by just saying that when I talk about things, about speaking out and of this nature, I'm only speaking on behalf of myself. I am not representing anyone. I'm just going to speak on my own experiences. I'm not naming people. I'm not commenting on incidents. I'm not doing any of that. But I wanted to talk about this statement because this is kind of the first wrestling show of note that's come back on this side of the Atlantic since speaking out. And I don't think it was handled very well, which I think is fair to say. Mm-hmm. Yep. Speaking out was not just a random month in 2020. And I think that might be lost sight of in some ways. I think that's fair to say. And what we need to understand is that fans are understandably very upset and feeling very hopeless about the wrestling industry because they have seen something they love crumble. Wrestlers are also feeling hopeless and upset because they have seen people they looked up to, people they worked with, they've seen their industry crumble. And I think there's become too much of a divide between fans versus wrestlers, versus promotions, versus companies. And I think it's important to know that everyone who wants to rebuild wrestling is actually sharing a lot of the same feelings right now. I think that's something that's kind of been lost in the last few months. Not everything will move at a pace that people want it to. And that's natural because we just want things to get better. But this does take time. It takes difficult conversations. It takes what are going to be some wrong moves and some right moves. And it should take what I think is a lot of common sense as well, which is unfortunately what I think the Progress statement was lacking going into all this. So basically, the good thing about the Progress show was they were going to relaunch using a younger, fresher roster. You know, people who haven't necessarily had a chance. It was going to be on the WWE Network, which is very notable as well. But what happened was fans asked Progress to be transparent about who was working on their shows, both on camera and backstage. And that didn't happen till after the show aired. And they released a statement that I felt was, I don't even have the word for it.
Weak.
I felt weak. Yeah. I felt it's very disrespectful to anyone reading it, I think is the best way to put it. And I'm not just talking about fans, I'm talking about wrestlers as well, you know, because mm-hmm. Progress has always been a kind of beacon that you want to work for. You know, it's always been kind of one of the big boys in the industry that you would strive to work there. And it just felt disappointing that the first big show back, they would fall at such a simple hurdle of just not being transparent with people. And I don't know how to phrase this without sounding insensitive, but keeping their noses clean. You know what I mean? Just run a pure wrestling show for people who deserve to work there and deserve to watch it. I think that's the simplest way I can put it. So I just found the statement very, very weak, as you said. I felt a heaped blame on the roster, which I thought was very unfair because the roster that was on that show, as I mentioned, was a young, fresh roster, just debuting. And to say that, well, we asked them and they didn't have an issue with it. I mean, is someone really going to stand up and say, you're one of my dream companies to work for. This is going to be on the WWE Network, but I actually have an issue with X, Y, or Z. This is one of the things speaking out addressed. It was one of the reasons why it happened. It was because, like, some of the issues that in the wrestling industry was people felt pressure. There's a hierarchy. There's, you know, there's a certain level of unfairness. And, you know, this just kind of personified a major problem that had happened in speaking out. And it just felt like, but look, it hasn't been fixed. You know, first show back, first hurdle, we didn't clear it. And it was just disappointing to me. And I know it was disappointing to a lot of people I've spoken to. So that's kind of all I want to say on it. And I just hope people are listening to me. They're just thinking about both sides and they're just thinking that, you know, everyone is in this cloud of disappointment and anger and hopelessness. And we do need transparency, and we do need to have these conversations, and we do need to, when something happens like that statement, instead of like either being super outraged or, you know, whatever, we need to have the conversations, be like, okay, well, why did this happen? Can we talk to people, make them understand that it shouldn't have happened, and basically just start looking after each other a little more. So like not every conversation has to be like, I don't want to say violent, like what's the word I'm looking for? It doesn't have to be.
Maybe.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be confrontational, you know? I just think we all need to take a step back and just go back to conversations about these things and actual work to change them. Because like some of you might have noticed, like I've been off Twitter for a week because I needed to look after myself, because I felt like everything was very, very confrontational. So I've been having conversations with people through emails, through DMs, you know, through Zoom, whatever, because I've found that that's a style that's working for me now to kind of work my way through. As I mentioned, speaking out wasn't just a month that happened last year. I shared my own experiences. I've helped other people with their experiences. I have been involved, you know, with helping with stuff backstage, and it takes a long time to work through. You know, it's hard to keep talking about it so publicly, but it does need to happen. I do want to make that clear. It does need to be talked about publicly, but we all need to realize that we're all on the same side, that we do want wrestling to be better. And if that means holding progress in that statement accountable, let's do it in a fair, rational, non-confrontational way.
Excellent stuff. As kind of all of your consistent with all of the stuff you've come out with and spoken about publicly, which you don't have to, and I recognize that it hits very personal for you as well. So well done. Fair play, that was excellent, and I think you've summed up a lot there. To touch on kind of what you spoke of, and when I speak as well, I want to make it clear that I speak for myself. I don't speak for anyone else at Low Blows or Katie or Dom or anything. We're just having an open conversation here, because I think that kind of needs to happen. Katie made a very good point there, and I think it's become quite contentious, almost as if it's like wrestlers versus fans, and wrestlers all feel one way and fans feel another. And this is just kind of hammering home what Katie said. It's not like it's wrestlers feel, a lot of wrestlers feel the same way. Keep in mind, the majority, there were fan statements within speaking out, but a lot of like the experiences were by wrestlers who wanted things to change, and the experiences they'd gone through, like Katie and many of your best friends in the industry have come out with stories of things that they'd have to suffer through and so on. So that's like again, it's people are on the same page, and just because a wrestler like doesn't tweet about something or tweets about something that's not speaking out related when you're maybe focused on it, doesn't mean that they don't care, they're not doing anything, they're actually in the trenches. Like, and it's particularly the likes of Katie and Debbie Keitel, they're in the trenches dealing with this on a daily basis, and for what it's worth, in the kind of area that Katie and Debbie working, and I know I work with the company Fight Factory, but again, I haven't done the groundwork with this. Like, I've just kind of supported from Low Blows and kind of done whatever I can, but my ability is limited within this. But the work they have done, even speaking objectively, is absolutely phenomenal. Like, you know, as far as Fight Factory goes, it's almost like, you know, speaking out, like they've boxed it off. I know, and I'm not even a trainee there, I know what someone would do in various certain circumstances. Like, Katie's made rules where it's like, if you have a problem with me or Phil, this is what you do. And I know that, you know what I mean? And I know it, and I'm not even a trainee there. Like, they've done so well in doing that. So I think a bit of acknowledgement kind of, and it's not like you have to feel a certain way, but just kind of acknowledge that this is personal as well. Even if you disagree with some things that are said, acknowledge that people are going through stuff. On the progress thing, do you know what this reminds me of? And I've spoken very publicly before, and like I said, what I speak is representing only myself, no one else. What this reminds me of is, do you ever have a mate who is with a bad partner, and they're like, they're giving out, and they're like, you know, when you're not involved in it, like, and the emotion isn't there for you because you're not in this relationship and you're just listening to them talk about it, you can hear it very clearly where you're like, the partner doesn't care about you. Like, they don't care about their relationship, and they're not going to change because they don't give a shit. Like, it's not something that you, like, whatever you say and whatever solutions you come up with, they're going to go, yeah, yeah, I'm going to do that. And then they just won't, because they don't give a shit, really. To me, I remember I spoke last year, again, myself, speaking about promotions, and I'm like, they won't change because they don't care. Like, a lot of promotions, I think, and again, not to needle Progress, because I don't know too much about Progress, and I'm not, like, in as much as I would be, say, with the Irish scene, but, like, I think a lot of promotions see this as just bad PR that happened a year ago. And that's an excellent point you made, Katie, where you're like, it's not just a thing that happened in June. It's a thing that people need action on, and they need this action. And I think, to be fair, like, what's happening now and the kind of struggle between fans and wrestling is fans are almost like that partner who's by no means the bad person in the situation. They're the partner who's getting treated like shit. And they're going, well, maybe if you just do this, I don't want to let go of this. I don't want to let go, because, like, for fans and wrestling, they're like, if it's over here, for example, if it's OTT, they're like, I don't want to let go of OTT because that's where I see my friends every month. And that's where I do this. And that's where I do that. And I'm afraid that if I lose that and I let go of this, and I just accept that this is the case, then I'll let go. So they keep fighting it, and they keep resisting it, and they keep going, well, what if you do this? What if you do this? And then it's like when your friend who's in a bad relationship comes back to you and is like, you know, do you believe he's texting someone else again? And you're like, yeah, yeah, because this is consistent with everything that I've come to know about this person. Like, yes, yes, I do, because they don't care. And I can see that because I'm not in the trenches with you. I'm taking a step back and looking at it. And it's kind of like that, where, again, a lot of the problems are bad promotions who just don't care. They just don't give a shit. And I'm not even saying that Progress is one of them, but it's something worth keeping in mind when you have these stories come out. And it's like, they failed at the first juncture badly. And that's something that I think people need to start accepting, that if it changes a two-way street, it comes with someone saying, I want this to change, and the other party actually caring and actioning it. If they don't care, then they'll just say, yeah, 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 we'll change. But then they won't, and they'll call your bluff. And if you're not willing to walk away, and if you're not willing to speak with your feet, then you won't get those changes. They'll just be the same people, because people don't change. They don't, like the, and it's not that people don't change, they can change, but it's hard for people to change. And it involves them taking personal responsibility, honest responsibility, not just going, oh yeah, mea culpa, we'll look out for that in future. And yeah, it's grand, don't worry, this will all be sorted. We take this very seriously. And then just, like, not doing anything. It comes with actually giving a shit about the issue. And if you give a shit about the issue, like Katie and Fight Factory did, Dave, you had that fixed before speaking out was even over. You're like, here's our 15-point plan. I could, like, turn around to you, Katie, now, and I could give you a scenario, and you could reel off a PowerPoint presentation for what I do in that particular scenario off the top of your head, because you care, because you actually put in the effort, and you're like, I want to fix this. But we're also, we have to acknowledge that we're dealing with people who don't want it fixed, who are just like, well, no, this actually worked out for us in the past. So I'm just going to wade through the storm, and just like I have with bad PR before, I'm just going to hope that it goes away through just putting out cool wrestling, good wrestling and cool videos. And I'm just going to throw substance at it. I'm just going to throw style at it. I'm just going to throw shiny things at people, and hopefully that'll make them forget. And it has in the past. But the reality that people need to accept is that this isn't just something that can just go away. This is something way bigger than all of it. This is something that will bring your company down. And if you're not careful, like, this is where it's going. But the problem is, those people aren't putting their hands up. They're not taking responsibility. They're going, yeah, no, I take this seriously. Yeah, 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 yeah. I'm gonna fix that. And then they're just doing whatever the fuck anyway. And they're still, like, kind of, you can see it, and fucking, they're still, you know, hanging around with their mates. They're still liking all their accused friends' posts and this and that. And they don't care. They don't care that much. And it's sad, it's disappointing, but it's at that stage where it's like, look, this is how they feel. They've communicated this to you. If someone tells you, there's a great bit of advice I got. If someone tells you who they are, listen. And these people are telling us who they are by their actions. And ultimately, I think that's something that that we need to start listening and just go, and we need to now go, right, well, if you're not going to do anything, I'm going to do something and I'm going to be done with this. But that doesn't mean that you have to hate all of wrestling either. There are good companies out there and there are good people within wrestling. Support them instead. Because if you're like, well, like, for example, over here, if we were like, well, what if OTT went away? We wouldn't get stadium shows. Well, no, if you gave someone your business who was actually a good company, they could go to stadiums. Like, that's just the way it works. It's economics. It's not anything magnificent. Like, and it's the same if you're in England and you're like, well, no, if Progress goes, this won't happen. No, just give another company the support that you gave Progress instead. Like, and then let a good company run by good people who've actually learned the lessons here, let them be successful instead. And then you can kind of build a world that you want. But trying to just force someone to change and just having the same conversation over and over for years, it's like listening to that friend where the 70th time they come to you with red flags about their partner, they're like, you're just not accepting this. You're just not accepting that this is the person that they are and this is how they feel about this subject, and they're not going to change because they don't care. They don't care about you enough. They don't care about the issue enough. They don't care about any of it, and they're not seeing it, and they're not going to see it. So that's my take on it. Again, only my take. I don't want to speak for anyone else. Katie, you've had your say, I've had my say. Dom, obviously, you're kind of, you know, a younger wrestler as well. You've valid takes on this. I don't want to put you on the spot or anything. If you don't have anything to add, that's totally fair. But I do want to open the table as well. If you've anything you want to kind of add on this.
No, I think both of you have hit the nail on the head there.
Okay. Good stuff. Well, look, lads, this is heavy. We get back talking about like good things about wrestling.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the things we like about wrestling, because it's time to talk about the good from the week. It's time for This is awesome. Best moments of the week. Look, let's talk about the good. We talked about the bad from Progress. Let's talk about, there were some positives on it. So Katie, take us through them.
Yeah. So look, as I said, I want to focus on the rebuilding of wrestling. So one thing I was excited about with this show when I seen it announced was the on-screen roster, because Progress were running a natural progression tournament, and it was filled with wrestlers who just before the pandemic had just been bubbling under the surface. You know, the names that crop up when people are like, oh no, like BritWrest will be fine because we've got XYZ. Mm. These were a lot of the XYZs, you know? You know, you had the likes of like Big Guns Joe on the show. You had like Chris Ridgway. You had, sorry, Phil just loves, yeah. Hi.
Phil is photobombing because City are playing though, so I imagine that he won't photobomb that much tonight.
No. That was literally just his beer run. You had Gene Money. You had Omari. You had Karen Noir, who was the champion before the pandemic. Just lots of fresh people. You know what I mean? Fresh people who didn't necessarily have a platform before the pandemic. So I was excited to see them. I'm still going to be excited to watch them. They seem like a good group of wrestlers. And I think it's definitely a roster that can be built on, whether in Progress or in other companies. I'm excited for this kind of like fresh blood in wrestling.
At the very least, like, you know, good young wrestlers who haven't been ruined or tainted by last year got a platform on the WWE network. That's a good thing.
Yeah, that's a cool thing to be able to put on your CV.
Yeah, that's it. And do you know what? Like, if that was the best it ever got, that's still pretty cool. Like, that's something where you're like, I've done something with my wrestling career. When you've got that, you know what I mean? Whatever happens from here, you're like, I was on the network. You know what I mean? Mm. That's one of those. So that's really cool for them. In at number five, I want to touch real quickly on the positive from Dynamite. It wasn't like the best episode of Dynamite ever. It was grand, it was fine. But I wanted to talk about Kenny Omega and his heel character. So they've set up, at the end of the show, they set up they did a promo where they set up Kenny Omega against Jon Moxley at AEW Revolution in an exploding barbed wire match for the AEW Championship. Okay, we will have time to discuss that. We'll be doing a Revolution preview on next week's show. But I do want to discuss the promo that they did where Omega was in a classroom reading a book to children, and just how much he's like, do you know Homelander out of The Boys?
Yes, I do.
He's Homelander. Do you know when Homelander is like in public and he's like, you guys are the real heroes here? And he's just you're such a fucking dicker. It was inspired because he's like, he starts reading like the Young Bucks book out to them and like just like ripping into the lads, but like in a really sarcastic, like patronizing, like even talking to children kind of way. And then the kids are like, can we play with you? And he's like, I think I've got to go. Don, do I have to go? And he's like, yeah, Kenny's got to go. Sorry, kids. Nakazawa will play with you. And they just kick the shit out of Michael Nakazawa instead. But Omega just being Homelander, if this is what the character is becoming, I am all in because I love Homelander. I think he's one of the best heels on television. Absolutely love this and well worth keeping an eye on. Every week they're knocking it out of the park with the Kenny Omega promos, and it's great to see. In at number four, let's talk about the positive from SmackDown.
Yeah, so like Rick Nash was saying there about AEW, like it wasn't the best SmackDown ever, but it was another solid SmackDown. Like I think that's what SmackDown is doing at the moment. It's just providing the most consistently solid show of the week. So starts with Roman Reigns and Edge. Like we were saying, like the last few weeks, like this is the match for WrestleMania. Like this is the right choice for Edge winning the Rumble. Roman Reigns versus Edge. Like it's the match everyone wants to see, I think. So I love the little promos between them. So it was a nice little promo off. Edge was talking about how he's getting into the head of Roman Reigns, stuff like that. But Sami Zayn comes out, and I love this little heely, whiny Sami Zayn character who thinks he has like a big conspiracy behind him, and he has like the camera crew and stuff. Like it's just absolutely brilliant. He comes out, he's cutting a promo, he makes it all about himself. Then Jey Uso just turns around and hits him a super kick. It was brilliant. Sami Zayn, I think he's doing, like, I think he said it himself recently, like, he thinks that's the best work of his career so far, and, like, I think I'd agree, like, he's just unreal lately, like, especially, like, with these, like, empty arena shows, like, he's really, really making the most out of them.
Yeah.
Nakamura and Cruz as well, they had, like, a really good short match, like, it was only, like, 6 minutes or so, but after the match, like, Big E was on commentary as well, and Cruz basically beat down the bottom, but I think Apollo Crews, like, we always knew he was good, but we didn't really have much to get behind him. Like, we knew he was good, but there wasn't really, like, any character or anything behind him. There was no edge to him. But I think we finally have a reason to get behind him with this new heel character. Like, proper brutal beatdown. Like, he beat them down with the steel steps. He's really, really been coming into his own lately. Like, I'm actually invested in Apollo Crews now, which is really, really good. Another thing that happened on SmackDown, this got spoiled on me. Well, I say spoiled, I looked on Twitter voluntarily, but the Alpha Academy turned heel. So Otis and Chad Gable, when I seen this, I was like, that's a bit shit. They haven't even started yet. They've only really been a tag team for like a little while. So like I went into it thinking this is not going to be good. But then when I actually watched it, I was like, okay,
yeah,
this could be good. Mm. So I look forward to see where that goes. And then obviously, I spoke about it already, there was a 6-man tag main event.
Sorry, just to kind of zoom in on there, on Gable and Otis, I thought it was great because it was like, the best heel turns are where you're just ahead of the curve. Do you know what I mean? You don't want a heel turn to happen when everyone's like, I'm sick of this character. You know what I mean? And then eventually they do something and it's obvious that that's the only thing that they can do. I think Otis still had enough juice for the heel turn to hurt. Do you know what I mean? And then you're like, right, that's why Gable's been hanging around with him, because he's like, Otis is a bit simple and Gable can manipulate him. And he realizes this is a big fucking monster if I make him into it and I can get like recognition through this. So it makes total sense when you see it in action. I get you. If I'd have been you and saw it, like I'd have been like, oh, I don't know. But like when you see it in action, it's like, it's just clear going on. And like, again, just the timing of it was they got in just before Otis got old. So like we're like, oh man, fucking Otis, like I was actually liked him doing that character. So and then when he turns face again, the face character won't be stale, so we'll actually be like, hey, Otis is back, you know. So really, really good. I'm glad you focused on that.
Yeah, and then there's your 6-man tag main event. I've already talked about this, but like anytime you have like Daniel Bryan, Cesaro, like Kevin Owens, all these people in the one match, like it's bound to be a good match. So like I know I was giving out about how they always like throw them together if they're already in the elimination chamber, but like it was a really enjoyable match, I thought, anyway. So a pretty overall solid SmackDown. Like it's just consistent at this point.
It was just a, it was a good go home SmackDown. Nothing spectacular, but yeah, I agree. It's just SmackDown is at a, SmackDown's like floor is still a pretty good wrestling show. So, yeah, 100% agree. Let's talk about Raw. Probably the better of the two shows for once.
Yeah, I just have to say though, that spoiler comment, Dom, I felt that in my soul. I am constantly getting outraged on things that I see on Twitter because I voluntarily went on after a big show. It's the worst. I get so tick at myself. yeah, Raw was good. Look, I'm going to preface this. I have a bias. Everyone knows The Miz is my absolute favorite wrestler, hands down. He is my number one. Mm. So, of course, I'm going to be happy that he opened the show as champion. What I really liked about Raw, though, is there's just a freshness to having Miz as champion, especially because they're not doing Miz and McIntyre. They're doing Miz and Bobby Lashley. I mean, like it just felt like a very keen show, like with the focus on Bobby Lashley and the Hurt and Hurt Business. I just cannot believe I'm so into him now. You know what I mean? Like, great promo at the start. It makes sense that he did Miz's dirty work in return for a title shot. It makes sense that Miz tried to weasel out of it. It made sense that John Morrison is just standing there being like, oh, I'm John Morrison. I'm not really having anything to do with it.
It's a solid John Morrison, to be fair. I feel like he does say that.
What I loved is the main event then. Miz comes out to watch. It's Bobby Lashley versus Braun Strowman. Not really sure how Shane McMahon is involved again, how he's making decisions and just wandering out and making matches.
Yeah.
But he did anyway. If Braun Strowman won, this is going to be a triple threat next week, the Bobby Lashley Miz title match. And I was fully expecting it to be a triple threat. I thought, like, two monsters squashing Miz, you know what I mean? Like, that's what they're going to do. But no, they had Lashley squash Braun Strowman. Well, not squash him, but like very decisively beat Braun Strowman, who always looks intimidating when he comes back. You know what I mean? He's always has that certain unbeatability about him, you know, no matter what he's kind of been doing. Like, it's like he resets, he comes back, he's the monster again. So I was just so happy that he went from losing the US title to like this serious, serious contender who I want to see as WWE champion in the space of two shows. Like, it's so fresh. I absolutely love it. I also love they announced Rhea Ripley's coming to Raw. That's going to be a badly needed injection. Shout out to Debbie Keitel. Spotted her in the video package. She looked great. also, Damian Priest, another class match. Another great segment with Bad Bunny. He's looking like someone who is going to be, like, a serious player on Raw. You know what I mean? I can see him in 6 months getting involved in some of the bigger storylines and matches. For now, perfect what he's doing, because he's able to go out and have these exhibition matches where he's getting himself over. Like, him and Bad Bunny, this great little charismatic sort of relationship. Bad Bunny killing it as a 24/7 champion, brought the belt on Saturday Night Live, is getting actual good, positive mainstream attention onto Raw, and seems like he genuinely loves wrestling and is having the absolute crack with everything he's given to do, which I always love in my kind of celebrity guests. And then we had Ric Flair and Charlotte, which I wanted to talk about because obviously Lacey is legitimately pregnant. She announced that last week. They were still advertising Asuka and Lacey right up until Sunday night and then just didn't have it on the show. Obviously.
Never acknowledged it.
Never acknowledged it, which was strange because when Keith Lee couldn't compete, they had a pre-show match to fill his spot.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's just so weird that it was just never acknowledged and then she just wasn't on Raw. You know what I mean? She just... Like, that's it. She's been put in her box and sent back home, you know? Like, it's just like, you know. And I thought they weren't going to address it at all, and I was so annoyed. But then we had this fantastic promo between Ric Flair and Charlotte.
Yes.
Like, I raved about Ric Flair a few weeks ago, like, just promoing. This is a more restrained Ric Flair. It's like someone sat down with him and said, look, these are the notes you need to hit in this promo. Can't be going off and doing Ric Flair things for 20 minutes. And he listened, and it was like, you know, like the Ric Flair of old, prime, top of his game, you know, so many twists and turns in this. So basically the gist of it is Charlotte just cannot understand why he's been doing this, and she seems very genuine when she's like, I'm just trying to protect our name, I'm just trying to like bring the family honor, like, why are you making this difficult? Because if you look at any of Charlotte's social media, she is very much like that in real life, you know what I mean? She is very much about legacy, she's very much about tradition and family. And I really like seeing that kind of more vulnerable side of her, where she was seemed genuinely a bit upset. And she's like, I don't understand why you're trying to undermine me. I don't understand why we don't have the same goal here. Like, I'm not trying to be better than you. I'm just trying to make Flair live forever. Mm-hmm. And I really kind of felt for her. And it's kind of the first time in a while she's kind of pulled me in emotionally. And then Rick is just like, no, like, I'm being genuine here too. Like, I saw someone who loved wrestling, who wanted to be better, and I thought had potential. Like, I want to help the women's division. I want it to be the best it can be. And if that means taking a different competitor and building her up, I'm building everything up. And I was like, oh, that's a really cool angle as well. Like, that's really genuine. And then you have these little digs, you know what I mean? Where you can see like the tension simmering under the surface, and Charlotte's shooting back at him like, yeah, it's funny you see potential in yet another young blonde. You know what I mean? And then you're pulled out of it again. You're like, oh, these have real shit. You know what I mean? Like, we know the character of Ric Flair so well that you can pull on these different threads, and you can make me feel six different things in this promo. So I just thought it was so well done. I'm really into what they're doing with them now. Like, as I said, I shit on this at the start when it started happening, this entire storyline. I've been so turned around on it. Looks like we're probably going to get Asuka versus Charlotte for WrestleMania, because Asuka's pulling the hand away after the match. Not a full turn, but there's definitely tension there. I'm not complaining if we get that match, because it's going to be a really good, solid WrestleMania match. But I'm very happy then if they start adding in this sort of Ric Flair angle, because he's played a blinder so far on it.
Do you know what it was like? Do you know when you're working with someone that you know quite well and you're like, right, we know each other. Can we be a bit personal? You know what I mean? Can we shoot a bit? And then you're just like, and you have that trust, and you have that, right, our friendship is strong enough that if I throw a real dig at you for the betterment of the promo, we're going to be able to go, that made it a good promo, and forget about the dig, you know? Mm. But when Charlotte fired back it didn't feel scripted and it didn't feel fully planned, because there were bits where like they were talking over each other and like they're about like Flair's like one side, can I speak, you know? Mm. It felt like a real conversation. So it felt unplanned, and they won't have the flex to kind of to get away with that, and they won't have the ability to. But when Charlotte said the line, which is an excellent line, about it's funny how you always see potential in young blondes, it's like she said something that she meant about her dad and she'd felt, but she also loves her dad and she didn't want to hurt him. You know what I mean? It's like, we might think negative things about our parents at times, we never say them, because like, imagine their faces, you know what I mean, about if how they'd feel and stuff. And like, she started crying, and she was trying to stop herself crying the entire promo, because she's like, there was real emotion there. And the fact that we could see her trying to stop herself crying made it so much more real. Cause it's like, she doesn't want to cry, but she's gone. And Flair, just Flair being totally restrained. It's like Flair almost speaking like Jake the Snake Roberts, just like in a hushed whisper. This is why I was doing what I was doing. What, you know what I mean? And then it's like what we said a few weeks ago, where it's like, we don't actually care if the story is a bit flamboyant and stupid and overdramatic, if they give us actual reasons for why the characters are behaving this way and we can understand it and we can buy into it. Then whatever, it's just a fun story. It's just a fun or different storyline. So no, I totally agree with this. One little note I'd like to add from Raw. At the start of the show, Lashley came out and was like, Miz, I want your decision. I'm going to give you an hour to think about it. I want your decision if you're going to give me a title match. I loved how they then had a countdown towards that throughout the show. Like, whenever they went to ad breaks, they're like 34 minutes until Miz's ultimatum. And I'm like, this just gives me urgency. You know what I mean? In it, where I'm like, oh, I need to see that decision. Oh, it's 20 minutes now. Oh, what is Miz thinking? And then he's backstage talking to Adam Pearce. Adam Pearce is like, do what you want, but make a decision. You've got until this amount of time. And it's just like, it's a promo, but like, it's fucking great. Like, it's just an extra thing that just makes it better. And I thought that was a really nice touch. Again, just those little things that showing what WWE are shit, it's because they're just going, we'll put Ric Flair with Lacey Evans and they're riding or some shit. And then we're like, this is shit. No thoughts been put into it. But when they do these little things, it's like, you're thinking about this, you put a lot of thought into it, you're going, how do we make that seem a bit better? How do we make that seem a bit more important? And a countdown was just a genius little move. So really good from Raw. I really enjoyed it this week. In at number two, NXT last week, we spoke a lot about how it's back after TakeOver and whatnot. By the way, sorry, just on spoilers there, Sean got in touch in the chat and said, I've muted all the AEW accounts on Twitter because they always tweet everything I don't want spoiled. Yeah, that's a fair point. Imagine how cool it'd be if Big Show showed up tonight out of the blue. Imagine the pop, like, if he's just the first promo, it's like, well, they can't do well, but, like, he just shows up. Yeah, that's a very good point. In at number two, NXT. We were talking last week about how NXT are back after a great takeover. And they had to carry that momentum this week. And, you don't expect too much, like, in the night after, because they have to kind of process and sell the reaction. They're not going to tell you. They're not necessarily going to have Adam Cole be like, well, here's a 10-point list why I turned on the Undisputed Era. They have to build that out and drag it out a little bit and build it up. And obviously, we spoke earlier about the twist in the main event and so on, which was really good. But there has to be, to carry the momentum, they have to have something there that makes it feel bigger than an average NXT. And they pull that off when they're doing the presentation for the Dusty Rhodes Classic, which at first I was like, I'm pretty sure we saw that at TakeOver. I remember Regal standing there. I remember there being like fireworks, and I remember people standing with the trophy, but whatever, we'll do it again. That's fine. And they have Dakota Kai and Raquel Gonzalez in the ring accepting the trophy. And then you hear Nia Jax's music hit. And then you hear Shayna Baszler's music hit. And you're like, oh, I remember that music hitting on this show. Oh, they were on this show. And they were both quite dominant on this show. And then they come out and they're like, okay, you're going to face us. Now, it's disappointing because I think it's on like the March 3rd episode of NXT. I don't see why they just don't have this be a WrestleMania match. Or a takeover match. Do you know what I mean? Like, give the girls a big, like, actually, like, justify the Dusty Rhodes Classic as being important. You're not going to give, you know, the MSK are going to get a shot at the NXT tag team titles. And that'll probably be a takeover match. But, like, justify it by having it be at a big stage. We're in WrestleMania season. Build this up. Like, they're on separate brands. So, like, they don't need to interact every week. Like, it's not going to get old just because WrestleMania's 2 months away. But still, that's not that we're talking about the positives from the promo. And it was really good because it's just having, when you have those former people, it's like when Becky showed up on NXT and you're like, oh man, Becky used to run this town and stuff. But like, but you also have that thing where it's like, oh, look how far she's come and so on, you know? And then you've Nia and Shayna standing in the ring and you're like, for all we complain about how WWE ruins these characters when they get called up, they feel like a much bigger deal when they're standing in the ring with the belts. Do you know what I mean? They feel like, oh shit, it's Shayna and Nia. They're here. They're coming down from Raw. So it was really good. And then the little references they had to, I'd forgotten about this. Shayna was in a feud with Dakota Kai and she was a bully when Dakota was like, a cute baby face. And she kind of bullied her a little bit. I think she broke her arm at one stage. And they referenced all of that within the promo. And it was just really strong. And it made Shayna look great. It made Nia look great. It made the tag team match intriguing because Raquel Gonzalez then got on the mic and Dakota got on the mic and she's like, well, I'm not the same person. And she's not. She's changed her character completely. And Raquel got on the mic and said, I've never met you two before. You weren't here when I was here. So it doesn't matter because you've never actually beaten me. And then you're like, okay, this is the intrigue because they've done really well to build up Raquel Gonzalez. And it was great. It was really, really good. It was one of the best things of the week until we nearly got away with it, lads. We came so close to getting away with it. When Nia Jax was in the ring doing something really positive, and then as they're going back up the ramp and the segment is so close to being over, you just have them get in the mic and go, I'm going to shove this trophy up your hole. It's like, ah, oh, you have to go there. Thanks, lads. But apart from that, if you can pretend that last 10 seconds didn't happen, really, really strong stuff from NXT on an overall positive episode. But it was not the best thing of the week because in the number one, the best thing of the week can only be one thing, WWE Elimination Chamber.
Yeah, so I was saying earlier that the Elimination Chamber was a two-match card, but that wasn't necessarily a bad thing because Well, first of all, the show ended at 2:30, which is amazing. It starts at 12, ends at 2:30. Like, that's ideal. But both chambers, in my opinion, delivered big time. Like, I was excited for the SmackDown chamber the most, but I think the Raw one might have been my favorite. But they were both quite even, in my opinion. But the SmackDown chamber, I think I made this prediction last week where it was going to be either Cesaro or Bryan start off at 1 and 2. They did, and they had some unreal spots at the start. Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn did a lot of interactions as well, and like I love the like the little nods between the two of them for their history and like stuff like that. But I think it was Sami Zayn that eliminated Kevin Owens as well. He jammed his arm in the door, and he absolutely wrecked his arm. Then he eliminated him. I think the man of this match though was Jey Uso. Like, I'm absolutely loving Jey Uso. I'd say Jimmy Uso is snapping because like he's probably watching this at home. Like, there's another main event I'm not in. But Jey Uso is just so good. Like, I love how like he's treated as a big deal now. Obviously, like we mentioned before, Daniel Bryan won this, and he won it from the number one or two, whichever one he came out, I can't remember, but he came out from the start and he won. So that was really impressive. It was a really, really entertaining match. Then the Raw chamber as well.
Just to talk a little bit about the SmackDown chamber before we move on. What I really liked about this match was I liked how they booked it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
They got rid of Corbin and Zayn straight away because you're like, they're not winning. And they're just like, grand, okay, like the final four are people I can all make cases for, brilliant. Because even like, I liked how they had Jey Uso finish second, because you're like, oh, Jey Uso is going to win this and he's just going to lay down. And that means that nobody has to lose the reign. So you're actually like convincing yourself all the time. Even when Cesaro goes and you're like, oh, I thought he might win this. Like, he was actually the bookie's favorite going into this, which I was really surprised about. But I thought they knew something. But then when they got rid of him, it was actually a twist. And then when they had Jey Uso, and then Daniel Bryan won. So they kept playing with your perception of what was going to happen. I really, really liked it. Katie, you watched the chamber too, didn't you? You're on a wrestle marathon this week.
Oh, yeah, I did. I did watch it, yes. I liked the SmackDown one. I much preferred the Raw one, I have to say.
Okay.
I'm not really sure why. I do know why. I love Jeff Hardy.
Randy Orton, The Miz, it had everything.
It was just all my favorites in one. But I did like this one because it did feel like anyone could win, and it's been a while since a chamber felt like that. So I thought that was really exciting. That's kind of it. Like, it's just, yeah, it was good to watch.
Good stuff. Well, we will talk about your favorite match now. Onto the Raw chamber.
Just before we talk about that, actually, I think we touched on it earlier, but so Daniel Bryan won the Elimination Chamber and he faced Roman Reigns straight away, and Roman Reigns won. But then straight away after, Edge comes in, hits a spear. Like, you don't even see him coming. Like, you just see him fly into the camera and he spears him. Then he's like, it's you and me at Mania. Like, oh, like, it's so good, this build already. And we're only in February. Like, they have another pay-per-view to fill. And like, I'm already sold in this match. But I can just imagine what this would have been like in front of a crowd. It would have been, like, the reaction would have been brilliant. But onto the Raw match anyway. I really, really liked Kofi Kingston being in this match because he lasted a good while as well. Like, when he got announced, he replaced The Miz, didn't he? Yeah, he replaced The Miz, which we know why that happened now. Mm-hmm. But I was really happy with how long he lasted in it and how good he looked in it. I was surprised as well because Orton was taken out quite quickly. I think everyone was expecting like The Fiend or Alexa Bliss, something to happen with Orton, but he actually got taken out quite quickly with like a roll up by Kofi Kingston. And like, I love the trend that's happened in like the last 15 years or whatever of Kofi Kingston constantly getting one up on Randy Orton. Like, it always just seems to happen out of the blue. Like,
yeah,
I think it was 2014. It was he beat him with the SOS, like, just clean. He just beat him with the SOS.
Yeah.
Then in this one, he got a quick roll up on him, and I think he was the first person eliminated as well. And there was no one else eliminated for a good while. Like, there was only like a couple of people in the ring at that point, but that was quite surprising. But it was just a really, really enjoyable match. Like, I love like, I love the stuff that's going on with Sheamus and McIntyre. Like, I don't watch Raw that much. Like, I watch SmackDown, like, from start to finish, but, like, I usually just watch highlights from Raw, but I always watch the stuff with Sheamus on it. Like, I think Sheamus has been just absolutely phenomenal since he got drafted to Raw. Like, he's just so good. I'm really into the stuff with him and McIntyre. Like, I'm sure they're going to have a singles match, that, like, Fastlane or Mania or whatever, and I'll be 100% into that. It came down to Drew McIntyre and AJ Styles as well. And actually, there was a few moments where I was like, Styles could actually win this. Like, that's something we haven't really thought about. Yeah. Obviously, he didn't, but the finish was really, really good as well. He went for a phenomenal forearm, but Drew McIntyre just jumped in the air and claymored him straight out of midair. Like, I don't think anyone saw that coming. It was just so good. But then Drew McIntyre wins. You think the pay-per-view is over, but no. Just to circle back as well, there was a point in the show which I really liked how they planted the seeds for this. They had MVP and The Miz just talking backstage. You don't hear what they're saying, and like the camera's only on them for like 3 to 4 seconds. Commentators don't say anything. You just see them. And like that happens in between like two of the matches, and like you kind of forget about it. But then when Bobby Lashley comes out and he beats the absolute shit out of Drew McIntyre, you're like, oh yeah, that makes sense now. Mm. And then you're just thinking, could The Miz cash in, or are they going to wait? So he finishes the beatdown, and he kind of looks at the Titantron, and you're just waiting for it. Then his music hits, he comes out. I liked how they did it as well, because they made it look like Drew McIntyre was going to catch him, because he was slowly, slowly getting up in the corner. Like, made it look like he was just going to catch him in a claymore straight away. Like, the way he milked just getting up to his feet. But then when they rang the bell, Miz kicked him in the leg and then hit him the DDT for a 1-2 kick out. Mm. Obviously, he wasn't going to beat him with that, but I liked how they threw that in instead of just hitting him with the skull crushing finale.
Yeah.
Then he hit the skull crushing finale after, and then 1-2-3, Miz is the new champion. And, like, I don't care what anyone says, I was delighted, because like, even what Kate was saying with like his promos and stuff, like, that's why I got behind him as a champion. Like, just his promos and just his presentation, like, everything is so good, and he's worked so hard for like the last 20 years or whatever it was. Like, it's very full circle as well, because this time 10 years ago he was going into WrestleMania 27 as a champion. Now he could be going into WrestleMania 37 as champion. He probably won't, but I didn't think of this at the time, but I did think that was really cool, though. I'm really happy, even if it's just a short reign, like, I'm really, really happy that he's a two-time champion. He's a two-time Grand Slam champion as well, which is mental.
That's a nice stat. I like that. I didn't realize that.
Yeah, it's weird, because, like, he's won the Intercontinental title, like, 8 times. He's won the US title. He's won pretty much every tag team title. And now he's a 2-time WWE champion as well. So
nice.
I think he's the only 2-time Grand Slam champion. I think that was really weird when I first heard that. But like, it does make sense when you think about it, because like, he's been so consistent for the last like 15 years or whatever.
Yeah.
What did you guys think?
Katie, this is your dream match.
Oh yeah, like, obviously I was very happy with the outcome. But I love the Elimination Chamber, because if you take Drew McIntyre out of it, right, and you think about the other 5 guys, they're in what I like to call like the Chris Jericho spot, where they can be openers or they can be main eventers. Yeah. All of them are just very transitional on the card. They're very good at playing any role, which for me gave a lot of excitement, because I genuinely felt like if they're taking the belt off McIntyre, anyone can walk out champion. You know what I mean? Even Jeff Hardy, he plays his role so well, where he gives you just as much hope that you're just like, I know they wouldn't. They wouldn't put Jeff on another run, would they? But like, more so like Kofi and stuff, and Kofi and Sheamus in particular, I always feel like they can rev it up to main eventers super quick. You know what I mean? It sometimes it only takes a show, it takes a match, and you're like, actually, you know what? I remember why they were champion before, and I can see them doing it again, because that was the point of this chamber, was that it was for former champions. So everyone has earned their stripes to get into this match. And so I love that unpredictability. Like Dom said, I love that Randy Orton went out first, because I think that took like the biggest hit out of the way straight away. Thought Sheamus was deadly in it, and I do actually still want to see Sheamus versus Drew. Like, even if it's not for a title, they've pulled me into that enough that I want to see Sheamus get that match.
Mm.
So, you know, even if that ends up on undercard, like, I'm cool with it. It just felt like a lot of kind of matches and fresh storylines came out of this Elimination Chamber heading into Mania season. And then obviously Miz walking out as champ, I will always be behind. I do think he's going to be a transitional champ, but it's going to be a great 2 weeks.
It'd be great. It's going to be an awesome fortnight. What I liked about it as well is, and I saw a lot of people giving out about the Miz, but this is one of these things where it's like you're getting worked here. And like in particular, and not to call them out, but like Voices of Wrestling should probably know better. Their coverage of New Japan, by the way, world class. They're the best in the business. If you like what I do, I read them and listen to them religiously on New Japan. So I want to get that out of the way first. But their coverage on WWE is not good because they don't like it. And it's just like, but they're a wrestling website, so they have to talk about it. So like at one stage, they put up a stat where it's like, Miz has only won 3 singles matches all year. Yeah. That's the point. He doesn't deserve this. That's the point. And you're supposed to be angry and say, but Drew's the real champ. He's just fought and beat 5 former champions. And Miz hardly ever wins. He doesn't deserve this. I'm angry.
Drew Lashley did all the work for him. Yeah, that's the whole point.
Exactly. Like, this is, you're getting worked here. You're feeding, like, whenever you're asking yourself, am I getting worked? Think, what is they wanted me to feel? How am I supposed to feel? And if you're feeling that, you're getting worked. Like, that's the point. Like, and he is still good. Like, that, we can never take it away. If Miz was a babyface tomorrow, in the same way Jericho would make you pity him, Miz would make you pity him as well. You know, that's, he is good. What I liked about this as well is, yeah, it just takes it kind of, it gets my brain on fire thinking about the scenarios, because they just feel like Drew now feels really far away from the championship picture. Do you know what I mean? He's just out of it altogether. How do we fantasy book this back to WrestleMania? Because I think, like, I really want the McIntyre-Sheamus match. And we're speaking about this on the air, just before we went on the air. Not only because Sheamus just posted a picture of my arse on Twitter for reffing one of their old matches that turns out was Dom's very first independent wrestling show for Irish Rip Wrestling back in the day.
In Bob Brigham.
Yeah, the combined community center. I want to see that, but I'm biased. It's on a personal level, seeing that on a WrestleMania would be cool, but again, it doesn't need to be for the belt. So what do we think now? Let's do some like idle, irresponsible speculation. Dom, what do you think the Mania title match will be?
I don't think he's going to win it next week. I think something's going to happen where they'll extend it to Fastlane at least, but I do think Lashley is going to walk into WrestleMania as champion. I think if that's what's happening, they're either going to go, if they have Lesnar back, they'll have Lesnar and Lashley. And that would be an absolute cracker.
Oh.
But I think what they might do as well is they might do Sheamus and McIntyre at Fastlane, and then they might have McIntyre and Lashley at WrestleMania. But I do think Lashley's going to walk into Mania as champion.
They could absolutely do that. And that'd be so shit, because it's like, no, give them, they want a match at WrestleMania. Like, that's the point of this. But I have a feeling that could be a good show. Katie, what are you thinking the plan might be?
Oh, the Lesnar thing literally popped into my head just before Dom said it. Like, and it's, I think that's the match. I don't think Lashley should go against anyone that's floating around now. And I think he should beat Lesnar. You know?
He's a legit monster now.
Yeah, that's it. Just strap a rocket to him. Just make him the next big thing. Like, just do it now. Pull the trigger on it.
I don't want to see Lesnar back just yet. Or not in this way. For one simple reason. What does Paul Heyman do? I want to see Lesnar come back on SmackDown. And I want Paul Heyman to be conflicted. Do you know what I mean? And Lesnar Reigns. Why do I want to see Lesnar Reigns again? God damn it. But I kind of do want to see what Paul Heyman does. Like, is Paul Heyman just coming out on Raw and going, I'm the reigning, defending, you know, and doing that for Brock Lesnar, would just be random. But he can't not come back. He's not going to do his own promos. That'd be weird too. So I don't know. It's an interesting one though. Look, I suppose we'll find out when we'll be discussing it. One thing I want to mention as well from Fastlane, and I don't want to seem like we're discussing it or not bringing up because it's WWE. The other match in the card was Matt Riddle winning the US title. Another just, I want to note this. I understand where WWE are at because they're such a big company that they, like when it comes to people that have accusations against them in speaking out, they're in a weird position. We discussed this talking about Velveteen Dream last week where they can't really like sack people like if it's just an allegation on Twitter, as much as we might like it. But we've talked about before this weird trend of some wrestling companies rewarding people who got like, there's no need for him to win. Why not? Like if he probably wasn't going to win and they were taking the belt off Lashley either way, because this is obviously the plan for Lashley. So Keith Lee was probably going to win, but they put it on Riddle like as kind of a makeshift when Keith Lee couldn't do it. But like fucking put it on Jomo before Keith Lee. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Like have John Morrison win the US title and Miz win the WWE title. Like I don't see the benefit to having the belt on Riddle. It's just pissing people off, and he's not very good in his new character. He's not entertaining. He's just a stupid little doofus. Like so it's not
gonna, I haven't heard anyone say doofus in a very long time.
But that's what I think when I see him. Do you know what I mean? I just go doofus like. So he's not good, he's not engaging, and it's just gonna incite a lot of your fan base for very like triggering reasons. Like, I thought that was crazy. But like otherwise, a good show and a good week of wrestling. So glad as always we could catch up on it all here. And now we get to go into this weird world where Big Show is a huge signing in 2021 for AEW. Let's just see what the next week brings. Guys, pleasure as always. We'll be back on Friday with Ask Low Blows, where we'll be creating an Irish wrestling TV show. I might tell you about an old TV show that I nearly made about Irish wrestling too. And on answering all your questions. There's been a twist in the Desert Island Dilemmas as well. But in the meantime, thank you, Katie Harvey. Thank you, Dom Tuck. I've been Rick Nash, and that's the bottom line. Because Low Blows said so.